Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Health Points, where we talk about anything and everything gamification and health. I'm Ben, and here today with me is my co-host Pete.
Hi everyone.
And joining both of us today, we have Amanda Philport. Who is an ex-NHS CEO and population health strategy specialist. She is the CEO and co-founder of EarGym after the first-hand experience of unaddressed hearing loss in her family. Amanda, it's great to have you on the show today.
Hi, Ben. Thanks very much for having me.
So it'd be great to start about your background and journey to becoming co-founder and CEO of EarGym.
Sure. So I should just say I'm a 56-year-old woman, so fairly unusual in a tech startup. I grew up in the Midlands in the UK as the youngest child of a family of four, which is kind of relevant when it comes to family dynamics and dementia. Studied psychology and sociology at college, and I have an MBA. And then if I just talk about my NHS, just to set the context, I joined the NHS in 1991 as an information analyst. And then I took a general management career journey spanning about 30 years through a series of operational and strategic roles in hospitals and primary care and community. And during that career, I held a role in public health where I really started to understand the importance of the social determinants of health and well-being. And that really heavily influenced my choice to become a chief exec of NHS population health commissioning organisations. And I was in London and Sussex for the last 8 years or so. And I sat on a number of boards influencing local, regional and national policy until I left in 2019.
And when you left in 2019, was that direct response to start the journey into EarGym?
Yeah. So in my last role in the NHS, I was working on the Industrial Challenge. I don't know if you remember that. And I was working on it with the Sussex universities and local businesses. And I became really interested in the opportunity to influence prevention of ill health from a different perspective. And then there was yet another reorganisation in the NHS. And as it kicked off, I realised that I really needed to change. And I was encouraged to apply for the Zinc Venture Capital Accelerator. And they'd just launched their mission to build tech startups that could improve quality of later life for 100 million older people. So I thought I'd have a go at improving population health by starting from scratch. And luckily, I was accepted onto that.
Brilliant. No, I know the Zinc program really well. And there's been some great individuals, but also startups that come out of it as a project and program. In that case, what were the events that led you to realizing there was a need for EarGym and there was a problem that was unsolved in this area?
Yeah, it was during the induction month at Zinc, one of the speakers, they had some great speakers. One of the speakers was one called Jessel Visnoram, who was at the Royal National Institute for the Deaf at the time. And I do consider myself to have a lot of good knowledge about population health. And she came and spoke about the massive global scale of hearing loss, of unaddressed hearing loss, and the increasing risk. So that's 430 million people at the moment living with hearing loss, adults, I should say, plus 1.1 billion living with mild hearing loss. And I was completely unaware of this. Another 1.1 billion younger people aged 12 to 35 at risk of hearing loss because of what we would call unsafe listening practices. So use of headphones, which of course has grown exponentially really since the early 2010s. And so I also didn't know about the correlation between hearing loss, social isolation, mild cognitive impairment and dementia. And hearing loss is in fact the biggest amenable factor in dementia and at 8% of all dementias. And the size and scale of that, that really the only solution at the moment is hearing aids, which are, you know, technically great for the most part, but also very expensive and difficult to access for a lot of people. So I thought that has to be an area to go at, you know, to learn about and to see if we can come up with a solution that enables caring for our hearing to become both aspirational and accessible. And whilst I was on Zinc, I met Andy Shanks, who's my co-founder, and Andy's a digital product specialist and also a retired DJ. And as part of my early learning around, whilst I was on Zinc, we did some hearing checks and both of us realised that we're living with moderate hearing loss. And in fact, I wear hearing aids now. And then we also reflected on the impact of hearing loss on later life and both of our sets of parents. have ignored their hearing loss for decades, as people do. And unfortunately, my father's living with dementia now, and we see the signs of cognitive impact, which may or may not be causative, but it's definitely there. And we thought, let's build EarGym, let's really try to tackle this massive issue.
So in that case, what is the concept of EarGym? What is the user experience and journey of using and engaging with EarGym?
Yeah, so the concept of EarGym, as I said, we wanted to build something that made hearing health aspirational and accessible. So we know that even when people start to recognise their own hearing loss, which actually takes a bit of time anyway, because it's not like sight, where you know whether or not you can read the thing that you used to read, or you can read something that somebody, you know, it's like the number plate test in a driving test. With hearing loss, it tends to be gradual, and you don't know what you can't hear. It, you know, you can hear 5 birds in the garden, you don't know that you're not hearing another 20. Until you're, whoever you live with, or, you know, somebody is complaining about the television being too loud, or you're finding social spaces too uncomfortable, bars and cafes and things, and you start to withdraw. So we thought even with all of those impacts, it then takes us about 10 years once we recognise our own hearing loss to do anything about it. And we also know the industry data is that the average age of a first-time wearer of hearing aids is 75. Well, they've already been living with the impact of a decline in hearing for decades, really, by then. So we thought the first problem is to raise awareness of our own hearing health, and to make people aware that they should check their hearing and start to think about how they might prevent deterioration. So we almost one of our first decisions was to say for EarGym, the branding is Love Your Hearing. So we wanted to build something that was aspirational and accessible, and for accessible, that meant affordable, and something that we can do in our own home. So we deliberately aimed at a product that people could use their own smartphones and their own headphones and do it at their own convenience. And that was those were guiding principles. And then I guess in terms of the product itself, we did a literature review of 3,000 papers to understand and learn about the science around hearing loss and its correlation with cognitive function. We have some superb board advisors from the UCL Ear Institute and from the Imperial College of Design who've been with us through the whole journey, guiding us from that expert perspective about things to think about and things to not. And within that, there's research, I guess I pick out Witten et al. Back in 2017, that showed that auditory training can improve your overall hearing capacity by up to 25%. So what we mean by that, or the way that I understand it and the way that we describe it to people when we describe EarGym, is if you think of your hearing in two parts. So you've got the sensory neural aspect, the bit, you know, your ears and the bit that comes through your ear into your inner ear and through your middle ear and into your inner ear, that takes in the sound. But then you have to apply meaning to it. And so if you go back to early man and you think about the sounds in the forest, is that the wild boar that's food, that is your survival, or is it the bear that is coming to eat you? You have to apply meaning to the same sound in order to know your response. So if you think about EarGym, if you think about the sensory neural aspect as your hardware, the auditory processing is your software. And what EarGym is trying to do is enable you to effectively practice listening, to do that auditory training, to improve your overall hearing capacity. And we hope, therefore, over time, to stay the rate of decline in your hearing. And there's lots of science about that needs to, we need to find the data. And at the moment, hearing data is really difficult to come by because of that thing about people not being aware of their hearing. So we wanted to build an app that would contribute to the science. So we wanted to use gamification to get people to do audio games so that we can gather audio data and see the impact on hearing and cognition over time for a large enough population to be able to contribute that data to this really important field of research.
So that's really interesting. Apart from the fact that I've just downloaded it while you were speaking, because I have mild hearing loss and I like the idea of being able to train myself to have better hearing.
Yeah.
How long a period of time are you thinking of gathering the data for and having people use the app?
Well, what we know is you can see an improvement over 8 weeks. So we did that with hearing training for 6 or 7 minutes for 3 or 4 times a week. So it's not massively intensive, but it. What we also know is that the training that we based EarGym on, we've achieved measurable improvement of around 14% using the Hear Who test, which is digital triplets test. So we obviously we're developing our product, and Witten's study was undertaken in lab-based conditions and using white noise. And of course, for enjoyability, what we've been doing is putting target sounds against, not against white noise because it's not that pleasant to listen to. So we use normal, you know, we use cafe environment or outdoor environment or motor environment, whatever. So we're still, we are building our product and working with our chief scientist to make sure that we are able to normalize and regulate our target sounds against our ambient sounds so that we can really contribute to the science. So when you talk about how long do we need to collect data for, what we would like to do is collect data over decades. But we know that the time for improvement is between 4 and 8 weeks in the first instance. What we also know from Witten is that when people stopped training, their hearing declined again. Their improvement declined back to the previous level. So we want people not to stop training, but they will reach a position where actually their hearing is not going to improve that much more, but then we want them to maintain it. And part of our research is to work out over time, how often do you need to train to improve? And then when you've secured that improvement, how often do you need to train to maintain that improvement? And then what we would like to do over the years to come is understand, you know, is to do that research through formal randomized control trials so that we can see the difference between people undertaking the training and people not undertaking the training.
That improvement within 4 to 8 weeks, are you seeing a reflection of what has been published previously of a 25% improvement so far within your data?
We measured 14% with our beta product. And so we've been working to improve our MVP and then to improve our training underneath that. And we're using our data to improve our training because, as I said, we're using some slightly different elements insofar as it's remote. It's not standardized in a lab. And we're using ambient sound rather than white noise. So we're tweaking our training as we go. But, you know, we felt it was really good to get that kind of feedback on our beta product using the Hear Who. The other thing that we're doing, of course, with the support of UKRI Design for Aging grant funding and the Alzheimer's Society has also very helpfully grant funded us, is to start to build RCTs. So we've just finished a pilot RCT, which was about the design of an RCT to make sure that as we go forward, we're able to really properly contribute to the field of science.
And 14% as a quantitative, is that a meaningful difference in people? And I guess also anecdotally, what is a qualitative change in people's lives by experiencing that change in their hearing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We have struggled with a meaningful, with translating what 14% means, or we're starting to translate it into decibels. So our chief scientist, Sharon Koifman, who's a hearing engineer and audiologist by background, would say that, you know, if you're doing lab-based research, any academic would be really absolutely delighted with the 2 decibel improvement. And so we're we're able to undertake more serious research, we're starting to translate it into decibels, and then you can start to apply that to a sort of an index of normal speech being at 65 dB or a concert being at 110 to 120 dB, and you can start to talk about safe listening in that context and the impact. So for example, a pair of gig plugs will normally take down the dB level to from between 10 and 17 dB, which can increase the period of safe listening from say 15 minutes to 2 hours in a loud environment. And so we are, rather than me sort of giving you a glib answer now, I'd say that what we're trying to do is translate our findings into a measure that makes sense to ordinary people, you know, to people who are not experts in hearing, so that it can give us a clue about the level of safe hearing and about environments in which we'll feel comfortable listening.
In that case, who are the people that EarGym is aimed at? Is it anyone who may be experienced or think they could be, or not even aware they're experiencing a change in? Because what you've described then about gigs, and I'm thinking more of the younger adults, 20s, 30s, 40s, who may be going to festivals and gigs more regularly than people in their 40s plus. Who are you aiming EarGym at?
Yeah, we've identified three audiences, really. And the way that we've segmented them is our core audience for our immersive auditory training are age 35 to 65 or 45 to 65, really. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that they're starting to experience hearing decline. One in two of them will be starting to experience hearing decline. The other is that I think at that age, and I may have mentioned I'm in my early 50s, and I'm aware that sort of it was in my 40s that I started to realize that I probably wouldn't live forever. And you start to experience your parents aging and you start to experience the health conditions of later life. And I think we realize that, you know, in that younger age group, you've got a level of immortality that doesn't necessarily make you pay attention to things like hearing and things. But also the economic impact of hearing loss is $25 billion per annum in the UK. And over $981 billion per annum globally, and that's because of stress and lost productivity and early retirement. So there is an enormous economic impact for individuals, organisations, governments, across the world. And so to maintain people in work, in productive lives, whether or not that's paid or unpaid, if we can target that group of people 45 to 65, so in the second half of their careers, then we can have a material impact, not only socially, but also economically. And so that's our target audience, 45 to 65 year olds. But we know from, we put out an ear age test, which is essentially a frequency slider. So we play a frequency and you slide your finger along and you hit pause when you cannot hear the sound anymore. And it gives you an indicative ear age. Now, that's not a scientific test, but it's a really good indicator. And we've had over 170,000 people do that. And that has an enormous number of younger people aged, you know, anywhere from 18 to 25, 30, probably 70% of the people doing that, because they're curious about their hearing. And what's been interesting for us is in taking away the barrier of having to spend several minutes checking your hearing or going into a face-to-face audiology appointment, in being able to just do a quick check, the amount of interest from younger people is really interesting. And from there, of course, we know that it's really important to signpost them to advice and guidance on looking after their hearing for life. So we do, although it's not a core part of the EarGym product, we're building a shop on our website, and we're building relationships with people who do ear protection, whether or not that's gear plugs or ear defenders or anything else, because that's a really, really important part of looking after your hearing if you're in those loud environments. But so we would call those testers, and then we would have our trainers, which I've talked about. And then there's a higher intensity part of the market, which is people who's, when they get into our more detailed tests, they might do the frequency slide of the ear age check. But then we do the digital triplets test built in-house, which is 23 sets of numbers in noise. And that is a very reliable test. In fact, that is the Hear Who. It's built on the same lines as the Hear Who test. And, you know, we're licensed to use it as well. And when people do that, they get a really good indication of how their hearing is. And we can say to them, actually, you know, the outcome of your hearing test means that maybe, you know, we can help you think about getting to a face-to-face audiology appointment for a proper, you know, pure tone audiometry assessment and more detailed examination and consideration of solutions like hearing aids. And that means that we are seeking to build relationships with hearing aid suppliers, because clearly raising awareness and helping people to the right solutions is something that we want to build good pathways there.
Now, I'm interested with these different segments, like you were talking about the young people who are curious, to know more about the gamification and the game that you're playing with people's hearing. And are you finding you need to design them differently for your different segments?
That's a Yeah, it's a really good challenge. It's a really difficult challenge for us. So when we were thinking about gamification, we were thinking about taking away the fear of hearing loss, fear of perceived frailty, fear of perceived disability. And we wanted people to feel sort of safe, emotionally safe around addressing their hearing. And that's why we went for gamification. And also, what we know from our research is that, you know, when you look at games, who plays those match three games, you know, the big colourful match three, the successful games like Candy Crush and what have you, they tend to be the age group of around 45 to 65. There's quite a lot of women playing those games. And we did some testing thinking that gaming would be the solution. And what we found in A/B message testing was that women in that age group, we had a high 6% click-through rate when we were emphasising the contribution to research around dementia. So, play these games, give your data, contribute to research, and women were highly motivated there. And guys in that age group tended to click through when the messaging was train your hearing, go to the gym and train your hearing. And more about personal control and the ability to self-manage one's own hearing. So what we then built on, we built this user-led design panel who have a range of characteristics. And what we have got back, not only from that panel of 11 people who work with us in our design process throughout, but also from general user feedback, is actually the gamification is important for the enjoyability, but the language of gamification is actually quite a challenge when it comes to a health product, because what our users want to know is, what is the impact and is my health improving? And so we're having to learn as we go about how to get the balance right between that, in that design process, between gamification for enjoyment and feedback that motivates people to want to continue to do it because it's having a positive impact on their overall health and wellbeing.
So that's really interesting. What have you learned so far in that balance?
Well, we're having an interesting debate at the moment about how, if you think about people will, our experience is that people will address and look after their own health when they identify their intrinsic motivators. You know, when you look at the, I don't know if you know the diabetes program, I think it's Desmond, it might be called something else now, in the NHS, but how you get people to stop smoking or address their habits for type 2 diabetes or asthma and what have you. You're looking at intrinsic motivators. One of the risks with gamification is that we move people towards extrinsic motivators and, you know, streaks and runs and leaderboards. And unless we keep that motivation, unless we keep evolving our gamification approach so that we keep that stimulation and motivation going, we're conscious of the need to make sure that we don't accidentally pivot people away from the intrinsic motivator to the extrinsic motivator. And so that's one of our challenges. It doesn't, I think it's an interesting challenge. I don't think it's a blocker. I think it's just a really interesting challenge for saying, we will never be at the point of going, we've got this, we've done it, it's nailed. Because we will have to keep making sure that we understand how motivation evolves and how that works for different for our different segments that we've talked about. And with that, of course, we have have the good fortune to have a behavioural scientist on our board of advisors who, you know, we do make sure that we're trying to learn from other more well-developed long-term conditions where approaches are in their coronary heart disease, etc., so that we can try to apply them as we evolve our product internally.
I think that was a brilliant answer. I completely agree.
Thank you.
The balance between intrinsic and extrinsic motivations. And we've had debates on health points and at conferences around kind of, is a real issue of gamification, because actually it removes the true motivation for improving health for the purpose of living a healthier life, as opposed to whatever that game mechanic is. In that case, what have you done? What have you explored in your design process of what types of game mechanics, what features around gamification that you've been involving, including an ear gym? And has there been a huge evolution even over the last couple of years in what you're developing and delivering to create these fun and engaging experiences?
Yeah, it's we started off thinking, well, you know, let's have a look at what the big games are. So we researched, you know, we did all the research of what people download and play at the moment, how often they play, and, you know, some really surprising, well, for us, surprising data in there. But that led us towards match three type games. I have to say, because we're a tech startup, one of the reasons that we didn't go down the storytelling game, because our pilot actually, and oh gosh, way back when, right back at the start, we were really lucky. Audible helped us record some 5-minute immersive Audible stories, audio stories, just so that we could test enjoyability. You know, when you're doing that very early user testing, will people like listening to immersive audio on their headphones in short bursts? And we got really positive qualitative feedback. But as a tech startup, we realized very quickly that when you're talking about hiring studios, hiring actors, getting directors, getting scriptory, that to do that and keep a wealth of material coming through was way too expensive for us. So we looked at, well, how can we build product that we can, once we've got the core mechanics in place and the interface right, that we can build on many layers and maintain the interest, which made us think about our early games. We were thinking about match three and stuff like that, which has that potential much more than always creating original material. As we've done that, actually, we found that sound recognition has been very appealing, and also that our users like things that they can understand the relationship and the transferability to real life. So we have three games up at the moment. One is a match three, an audio match three. So you're doing pitch or reverb or whatever. One is locating sounds amongst background sounds. So, for example, in the jungle and what have you. But the most popular game, I happen to like that one best, but the most popular game from our user perspective is one that we call Busy Barista, which is about operating as a barista and taking orders of increasing complexity and increasing in different environments. But people can recognise those environments. Are they a train station? Are they in a cafe? Are they in a park? Because people recognise, you know, they do go out and order coffees and they are doing that in noisy environments, they can understand the transferability to real life. And that has guided our future plans for our future games. The ability to play in short bursts is important, I think, although, you know, we have some people who play for a really long time. But the ability to play in short bursts, so, you know, in between things or maybe on a coffee break, has guided us. And other things that we learn about, if you look at, you know, we talk about what do we use, what do we use and what do we pay for, what do we value on all of our apps as a team. And if I use Duolingo as an example, one of the improvements that they've done recently, and I've used Duolingo for a long time, the thing that has made me go back to it and really enjoy it this time around is that I now understand that their leaderboards are based on comparing people based on the number of times they play rather than their competence in a given language. So I play 5 times a week. My rate of improvement in those 5 times influences my position on the leaderboard, not my comparative performance to somebody else's language learning. And the same needs to apply for us in hearing health. We need people to be thoughtful about their own hearing, their baseline, the impact on their life and the actions they can take, not what somebody else can do or how they compare to somebody else. It's not, you know, competitive hearing doesn't make much sense in that way. But rates of improvement and effort, routine, measuring routine as a competitive element, we've seen is a really good initiative by Duolingo. And we are also getting that feedback. And so, you know, that kind of learning has been very helpful for us about where is the competition and where does the competition motivate and where does it risk being a demotivator?
Fascinating. The one thing I want to go back to as well is you mentioned you had 170,000 people into a data set, into the completed the assessment. That's a phenomenal number. What it reminds me of in a way is one of our Series 1 guests, Michael, who created the Sea Hero Quest game around wayfinding and understanding of navigation for people who were going into cognitive decline and Alzheimer's, and ended up having over 1 million people play the game and a data set far too big to deal with. One, is 170,000 too many for your data sets in terms of what you're expecting? Two, how did you get to 170,000 people completing it? Because I think that's a fantastic figure. How did you get there?
Yeah, then, well, there's two things going on there. We've had the data that we got there through using YouTube. And since we started it on YouTube, we built it into our app. So it's on our app. We initially found the technology quite difficult to put into the app early on. So that's why we started with YouTube. But also YouTube's a handy channel for that sort of thing. So our database doesn't reflect the 170,000, although it reflects a lot. It doesn't reflect all of it. But Andy has been really good as the chief product officer. He, from the off, said, if we're going to do data, we have to organize all of our software has to talk in this way, and we have to be able to go out on both iOS and Android, and we have to, you know, build in this language and do this so that we can organize our database and absorb data and buy bigger data warehousing, I guess, as we grow. So we have always had in mind that we will build a massive database, and we're on that journey. We're not there yet. That said, we've gone over 11,000 downloads, and we have, you know, all of that data. We collect a lot of data in that way, in terms of frequency of gameplay and what sounds can be heard, how many errors in the thing, you know, what's the impact to their tests and things. How did we reach 170,000? We have, because we've been thoughtful from the beginning about what is the messaging around hearing health that will motivate people to care for their hearing, we have run social media messaging for a long time. And so we are on LinkedIn and Twitter and Insta and, you know, various channels, saying to people, do you know how your hearing is? What's your hearing age? This is a 30-second check. And because it's a short check and people can click on it and do it, you know, how do you compare to your friends? It has some, it seems to have some take up, and that's good. And it, you know, it's a, for us, it's just getting people to be interested in something that we hope that, you know, they will value, because it's useful to know. You know, even one of my family, who he's 31, because of me going on and on and on about EarGym, as one does when, you know, when you're building a startup. He came home a week or two ago and said, look, here's my geek plugs, and they're attached in my keyring. They're on my keyring because I do not need hearing aids at this point, but I'm not going to get to that position. So I want you to know that I am wearing these. I wear these all the time. And in fact, he then reported that he'd been in, you know, he lives in London, been in a busy pub. He was interested in how it affected his experience of the evening and how much more comfortable he found it, but also how it took the, if you like, the distortion out of the conversation in such a loud environment, and that he found his cognitive, he was much less tired from the listening effort, which is almost exactly what we want people to say, except I hadn't coached him in, you know, that was a private conversation, if you like.
In that case, what's next for EarGym? Where do you see the next 12 months going?
Well, the place we're at the moment, so I've talked a lot about, you know, we're amongst the first to market in this, you know, well, probably first to market in terms of this immersive auditory training. And we know then that you have to warm up the market, raise awareness, and get people to want your product. So I talked at the beginning about being aspirational. We are finding our way to market. So we have trials set up with over 25 companies who are either companies who are doing employee health and wellbeing internally, or platforms that provide employee health and wellbeing. And that has a potential reach of 30 million people. And the question is, how do we get take up within that, within those trials? You know, the B2C route, and we're also obviously looking at the B2B route and health insurance and what have you, and the relationship with hearing aid companies. All of those commercial routes, we're in that stage, and I know that many startups go through this phase, but just getting past that hurdle of proving that we can monetize Eagen. And so our next 12 months is making sure that we prove it and really accelerate the route to market, because we have a very, very clear plan for the next decade of our product development based on our data set. And, you know, we started with our IP process 18 months, 2 years ago. We're a long way down that road. So we know where we need to go, but we also recognize and respect investors' need to be confident that we can monetize. And so we're getting, we have a lot of interest. We have a lot of grant funding. We're ticking a lot of good boxes. And this is our focus now.
And do you have a plan then in the future? Are you aiming for the direct-to-consumer option, which you have now on the website? Do you think is more in the future commissioning at large scale?
No, we think that the future is in B2B and B2B2C, because we recognise that actually the benefit of people staying connected, the benefit of people staying productive, the benefit of deferring, of the potential of deferring cognitive decline, they are all huge benefits to the economy and to government and to industry. And that's where we think this is a health benefit. This is a real material benefit to society. And we think that that is a B2B or a B2B2C solution. And whilst we'll keep the B2C channel open, it's not our first route.
I think I completely agree with you in terms of what the strategy is commercially. I think I'll be doing exactly the same. As a final question from me, Amanda, is where do you see the future of health gamification going broadly? What does the next 5-10 years look like, do you think, on the national, continental, global stage for health gamification in population health?
Well, I think the great opportunity of gamification in health is that it lowers the boundaries to entry. So it allows more people to consider and explore the things that they are concerned about in environments which I use the phrase emotionally safe in a discreet way that allows them to explore their concerns and understand their health, perhaps without being exposed to other people's judgment or certainty sometimes. So I think gamification can make all of that feel a little bit less scary. I think we think that where gamification is going is it will help us to make more accessible self-administered assessment and diagnosis, as well as rehabilitation solutions. So, I mean, I think there's some very interesting challenges there. You know, we hope to be able to get to a point, and I think, you know, many companies are getting to the point where you can do different diagnoses for different conditions online already. I think there's a really interesting challenge around how you do cognitive diagnoses online in a safe and supportive way. And we would want to contribute to that sort of emerging knowledge base without, you know, leaping into it. But I think objective-based checklist systems, you can use games to use, you know, games use quantification in their scoring systems. And we can apply that to education and health. I think we would describe it, one of my team, Jay, described it as the accomplishment dopamine, you know, applying that feeling of the mastery of our health through gamification. So we think it has huge potential. But as I said before, we're mindful of making sure that we manage the relationship between intrinsic and extrinsic motivators. And that makes it a really exciting challenge, doesn't it?
I think it's a properly exciting challenge indeed. Amanda, it's been great having you on today's episode to look at the size and scale of a problem of hearing loss, which affects billions of people worldwide, that created your problem, which resulted in you looking at how to create that solution. Building a gamified solution based on the science and research, but then also to gather more data to further contribute to that science and research, and the role of games in assessing people's hearings to guide them on the journey of better hearing, while treading that balance of extrinsic and intrinsic motivation in gamification. Amanda, it's been fantastic to have you on the show today.
Absolute pleasure. It's been great to talk to you both. Thank you.
It's been really, really interesting, and I've got some listening to do.